Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. We're starting off the year by discussing one of the more harmful bits of depictions of trans women to come out in recent years. Here comes Bad Representation 2, Amelia Perez. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who'd never rep me wrong, Susan Bridges.
Hello. I try.
You've done a great job.
I get very aggro when people stare.
You do. But that's not rep. Anyway. All right, let's move on. Our guest this week is Jesse Earle, a writer, journalist, and filmmaker known to over 250,000 YouTube subscribers as Jesse Gender, where she breaks down science fiction, pop culture, and politics through a queer and trans lens. Jesse's work has appeared on GameSpot, Microsoft, Out Magazine, The Advocate, Pride.com, Inverse, and Skybound Entertainment. She also recently wrote, directed, and released her film Identities, a queer cyberpunkish thriller starring John DeLancey, Abigail Thorne, and Jessica Nicole, on the streaming service Nebula. She hopes to continue the story of Identities as she is currently pitching it as a TV series. Welcome, Jesse.
Hey, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we finally got you on. I've wanted to for a long time.
Yeah, and I'm glad I get to talk about Amelia Perez.
Are you?
Okay. Yeah, I'm so excited.
We'll get there in a second. But first, I want to talk about Identities because I have seen it and dang, there is a lot going on. I see you and your metaphoric use of color.
Good.
Did you want to tell folks a little bit about it and the themes that you're exploring with it? Let's entice people.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that I wanted to talk about with the film, I guess to just entice people initially about it, like the big pitch of it is two people wake up in a room, a boy and a girl, no memory of how they got there, no way out, and they have to and no memory of who they are, and they slowly have to figure out their identity, as it were.
It's a very trans premise, let me just say.
Yeah, like basically, having to figure out your identity in a very select controlling system, who would have thought? Mm-hmm.
Right?
I never would have got that as a trans thing.
No.
But yeah, the main idea that I wanted to like focus on with it, because it was intended to be just a short and then it sort of expanded out because Nebula came in and things like that. And then I wanted to expand the story more, which is about how our identities are sold to us in today's day and age. So the film is kind of like Matrix meets Severance. So just how corporations and society generally attempts not just to sort of tell you what your identity is, but to try and sell you a sort of like different aspects of your identity and say that it's being, you know, inclusive and diverse, because the main idea that sort of the film started with was what if we lived in a society let you choose your gender?
Right.
And like,
what if?
Yeah, right. Which would seem on its surface to be like, that's a much more inclusive style society. But even in that, there are ways that this, again, I won't spoil the movie for people, but nefarious entities can use that to their own advantage. And then I wanted to talk about like, again, that idea of finding yourself and finding yourself amidst stuff like that, of like, how do you figure out your identity when every single moment an identity is being sold to you? And then also about the limited imaginations of people in power, because we have the ability to imagine anything that we want to, but we only imagine these sort of limited, as the film takes place in, like one little white room box with zero style or anything like that. And so it's sort of like we could literally build anything. And again, I don't want to spoil the twist of the film, but it's very much about like the ability to break these constraints of our imagination and also the boundaries of what's sold to us. So
absolutely. Everyone should check that out. And it's also on Blu-ray now, right? If people prefer physical media.
Yes, it should be. It keeps getting pushed because the manufacturer has like some weird stuff going on. Nothing bad, but it's just like they have other stuff that they have lined up. So it should be out relatively soon.
Okay, but it is coming and you
Yes.
can pre-order it now, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
there's some fun Easter eggs on there because, like I said, I've been wanting to pitch. There's further story and background for all the characters and stuff. And we recorded some audio dramas that didn't get released because we weren't able to finish them just because of budgetary stuff. But I put some Easter eggy stuff from those audio dramas on the DVD so you can kind of find them. So.
That's really cool. I did not know that it was an audio drama first. Do you know we run an audio drama production company? That's very cool.
Oh, yeah. I did not know that actually.
Okay,
So
we're
it's good to
learning things
know.
about each other today.
I am a huge audio drama fan.
Yeah.
Legitimately, I should tell you this because John Delancey was on the film.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be that nerd because you both know I'm a Trekkie. So I
As
didn't
are
want
we.
to. Yeah,
Yes.
I'm looking at a Picard pillow in your background of your room
Yeah,
right now.
yeah.
But yeah, like I didn't want to be that nerd who was like goes up to John as we were working together. And he was fantastic, like legitimately one of the coolest people I've ever worked with. I was worried, not like I didn't think he was gonna be like a bigot or anything, but like it was a very queer and trans set. And so I was
Yeah.
like, he's an older guy, he's been around. Like I didn't expect him. He's like he didn't miss anyone's pronouns, was super engaged the entire time, was like very thoughtful about the character. Like he could have just showed up, done the thing, and then left. But he was one of the nicest people I've ever met.
That's wonderful. It's always good to
Yeah.
hear that about people that you whose work you like, that they're actually good people too, you know?
Exactly,
Yeah.
but I didn't want to be that nerd who was like, oh well, I love you, it was cute. I want to be like I'm a cut above. I'm a cut
Pretty
above the
cool.
riffraff. Yeah, I'm actually cool. So I went up to him. So there's this company that John founded with Leonard Nimoy and was an audio drama company, and they did like these old H.G. Wells audio dramas,
I
which are
had
some of
no
the
idea.
they're
Wow.
they are some of the coolest things that you will listen to. Like their take on The Time Machine is one of the scariest audio dramas I've listened to. It's horrifying. Like when the time traveler goes down into like the Morlock's lair and everything, it's absolutely fantastic. So I have the old cassette tapes.
Yeah.
I think the first man to the moon is the one that I had. So I brought them in. I was like, I have to let you know these really inspired me as a kid because they did.
Yeah.
And he was like very excited about it because no one references that. But like it was
Sure.
him, Leonard Nimoy. He got every single one. He got a bunch of Star Trek actors. So like
Wow.
Andrew Robinson's on a few, Kate Mulgrew's on a few. It's very, very good, especially if you're a Star Trek nerd. So.
That's amazing. Now I have fun new things to look for. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, and they also did a Spock versus Q comedy thing too, where it was Leonard Nimoy versus Q, and it was just like them talking for like a whole like an hour, just doing
Okay,
comedy bits as the
I need
character.
this in
It's
my life
fantastic.
so badly. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, let me ask you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
I mean, for me, it's kind of fascinating. I was thinking about this. I knew you were going to ask me this before we came
Yeah.
on, and I could easily point at like, a lot of different moments that were really special to me as I transitioned. But I think what has been the kind of most interesting thing for me, because I started transitioning like way back in 2014. So it's been about 10 years. And, I had my last like major trans surgery slash transition milestone like 4 or 5 years ago at this point. And now it's just sort of like, it's just how every day, like my existence is.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of the best part of it. Whereas, like, if I didn't live in a world that re constantly reminds me that I'm otherized
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
something to be feared or hated or whatever, like, beyond that, like, I'm just living the life that I wanted to always live. And I feel very, it just feels like me. And, like, it doesn't, like, you kind of, like, when you start transition, it's this like big revelatory moment and amazing, and as it should be, and it feels like this wonderful joy at finally getting to be yourself. But then there just comes a moment where it's just sort of like, yeah, this is who I am, and I get to just get up in the morning and exist as this person, and I like this person, and I'm excited about this
Yeah.
person. I'm excited to explore this person's future in every single moment as this person, which is not something I always had. And so,
Exactly. Yes. Very same.
yeah, the mundanity of it, I think, is like
Yeah.
the
Just
best
getting
part.
to wake up and be yourself every day and be like, yeah, this is just it now. And that's so good. It's, yeah. Yeah. It's
So,
wonderful.
yeah. So, yeah, I think that would be my answer.
Excellent. Okay, I doubt there's anyone listening to this who knows me and doesn't know you, but just in case, where
We're
can they
trans
find you?
Trekkies. The Venn diagram is a circle.
Where can they find you online after listening?
You can find me at Jesse Gender, which is my main YouTube channel. On Nebula, as you mentioned, that's where Identities is. And I should also hawk my own podcast called, right now it's called the Jump Gate Podcast, because me and my co-host Vera, we're rewatching all of Babylon 5, but we're just about to finish that. We've been going through that for the past 2, 3 years, so we're jumping over to the reimagined Battlestar
Okay.
Galactica show, and the podcast will be called, sort of skirting the edge of your PG-13 sort of rating for this podcast, is called Frack This Podcast.
Oh,
So
frack is fine now.
yeah,
Frack is
exactly.
bad as
We
PG-13. We're all
can
good.
use frack. That's
We
exactly
can.
why Battlestar Galactica used it. So
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, them using that word all the time. I was like, yeah, this is cool. And I'm wondering now as I'm going to watch it as an adult for the first time, if it's going to be like, oh man, this is this is very cheesy. I'm excited.
Excellent. All right, so let's get into this week's topic. Emilia Perez was a movie released in 2024 about a Mexican trans woman written and directed by a French cis white man, Jacques Audiard, based on a book written by Boris Rozon, also a cis man from France. If any of that gives you pause right up front, well, it should. I'd heard the movie was about a trans woman, so I was intrigued and added it to my list to check out. And then I heard it was about a trans woman who's a cartel drug lord, and my heart kinda sank because already I felt like I knew where it was headed. But I went into it with an open mind. I'm a screenwriter. I've trained myself to approach all art on its own terms and give it all the chance. But I'm also a trans woman, and I know how cis people writing about trans people often goes. See the Trans Tuesdays on Bad Representation, Lovecraft Country at TillysTransTuesdays.com.
I should say here too, like when I first heard about the movie, I was like, oh. Because I always keep arguing for it's like we need more messy trans representation.
Sure,
So like a drug lord
absolutely.
trans rep, I'm like, cool, that could be interesting. Did
It could be.
not go that way.
Yeah. As I was watching it, I just felt my heart sink with every passing minute. I think we weren't even 20 minutes in when the first "what the F" not complimentary escaped my lips. I was just going to watch it and note a few things afterwards, like I always try to do for my trans rep in media reports. The new ones are coming in the next few weeks. But I ended up taking multiple notes in spite of myself because so much of what I saw was so damaging and dangerous, and I'm so tired of it. And then I thought I'd just talk about it in the trans representation in 2024 movies and TV episodes, but the more I thought about it, the more it felt like I needed to talk about this movie on its own first. Because it won multiple awards at the Cannes Film Festival, and as of this writing, it's shortlisted for a nomination for multiple Oscars, including possibly being France's official entry as a country.
And it just got a ton of, I think, the most nominations out of any movie for the BAFTAs this
The
year. And
BAFTAs,
also,
yeah.
I think a Golden Globe nomination, or at least a couple of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did just see that BAFTA thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oof.
They cis people love to pat themselves on the back
They
for
do.
telling terrible trans stories.
Yeah.
And again, if a movie about a Mexican trans woman being submitted by the country of France isn't sending up some alarm bells. Very briefly, it's the story of a trans woman cartel leader who hires a lawyer to help her transition and what happens after that. It is also a musical. And it's a very weird musical. But let me make something clear here. That it's a weird musical is a point in its favor with me. You can read more about it at a link in the show notes. But I love weird stuff that takes bold swings, and I was actually really impressed with Carla Sofia Gascón, the trans woman lead actress who plays Amelia. She was really great with what she was given to work with. The problem is that what she was given to work with is super problematic. Okay, so Jesse, before we get into the specific problems with this movie, what was your overall impression? Like, did you have that same sinking feeling as you were watching it, as it just seemed to get worse and worse in terms of the rep?
Yeah, because I agree. You were sort of saying like going into it with an open mind.
Yeah.
I when I first heard, because I heard about this way back, because I had friends who goes to go to Cannes, and they didn't tell me they had seen the movie. Otherwise, I would have like interrogated them more, be like, oh, I heard about this one. I'm like, you, my friend, and I'm like, oh, okay, like a messy trans woman, bad
Yeah.
character, and it's a musical. I'm like, that's really weird, and that could be up my alley.
Right.
But when I went into it, I had the same exact reaction as you because I was taking notes on it because I was like, oh, I might do a video on this for my own
Sure.
channel, which I am end up going to be doing. And I just was like literally half my notes are what the hell the entire time. And what shocks me most about it, and we'll get into it as we go into it, is
Yeah.
like I initially thought it was going to be like, okay, they'll get a few things wrong, like, okay, they'll dead name the character when it's inappropriate or get stuff wrong or like overly focus on surgeries. And then we'll get to that part because that's a whole thing in
It
there as
sure
well.
is. Yeah.
But like what is worse to me, and again, we'll talk about it, is like the underlying narrative of the film
Yep.
is incredibly just leaning into all of the harmful tropes about what it means to be trans. And while the movie is doing this whole like pitying, sympathetic, like we really care about trans people, aren't they so wonderful? It's trafficking in all the tropes that underlie a
Exactly.
lot of the TERF rhetoric, a lot of the anti-trans rhetoric. And yeah, it is that's what shocked me most. It's not like surface level problems with this film. It is like the
Right.
underlying like themes are deeply anti-trans, even while it tries to sell itself as super, super trans friendly in
Yeah,
a
it
condescending way.
fundamentally does not understand what being trans is, which we're going to get into. Now, to be fair, I'd heard that the movie fixed some problems with the book it's based on, namely that in the book, the cartel leader goes on HRT and has gender confirmation surgeries simply to avoid being caught for their crimes. Given that, I'm willing to take folks' word on it because I'm not going to read that book.
And I mean a bar that's like, well, the source material was even worse, not great.
Honestly, I don't actually believe this, but I was writing in my notes as I was writing. It's like there's a part of me that's like I almost wish they had kept it that way because at least you could have done the silly Silence of the Lambs thing where it's like, well, they're not really trans, so it's like still horrible, still terrible, but like the way this movie goes, it's just like, oh, let's just say all these things about trans people. It's like it still would have like that version would also be really terrible and terrible in its own way. It's just a different kind of terrible.
Right, because if a cartel drug leader goes through transition just to escape the law, that means that they're not actually trans. And that conceptually perpetuates the trans women are really just violent men in dresses trope that transphobes use time and again to legislate our rights away.
And also like, oh, they're pretending to be, they're tricking you, that sort of thing,
Exactly.
which and it like to go, oh gosh, the Silence of the Lambs trope. I don't know if you've talked about it on your podcast before, but like one of the things that that movie does is Buffalo Bill, the villain of that movie, is clearly like trafficking in a lot of those like men in drag tropes are evil killers sort of thing. But they say there's a line that a lot of anti-trans cis folks like to point to where I think Anthony Hopkins says like, well, he's not really trans. And so people are like, well, there you go. That means none of this is harmful to trans people because he said it's not really trans people. And so that kind of like places it into like, well, you're still perpetuating all of these tropes about trans people. And like if this movie had done something similar to that, like it would have like been an entirely slightly separate conversation and been slightly different, like still perpetuating those same harmful tropes. But like what this movie is doing, as we'll get into, is like, this is a trans woman. We cast a trans woman to do the thing. But then it's saying like, oh, but all of these underlying things that we'll get into are a, like natural part of being trans, which is even
Right.
more like
That's
essentializing and messed up.
so, it's such a problem. Imagine being a cis man and thinking that was a good book for you to write. Imagine being another cis man who thought that was a great concept to turn into a musical. Woof. To the movie's credit, they present Amelia as a trans woman who, quote unquote, always knew she was a girl since childhood and is actually trans. And in movies like this, so often, cis men are cast to play trans women and thus even further perpetuate that we're nothing more than men in dresses. Listen to episode 4 of this show on trans roles and stories for more on how and why that's a horrible thing to do. Not all movies about trans people made by cis people come out bad. I talked in episode 52 on trans rep in 2023 movies and TV about Monica, which is a very good movie starring Trace Lissette. The writer and director of Monica at least brought Trace on board to consult, though he really should have made her a co-writer and co-director at minimum, but her involvement behind the scenes showed. I can find nothing that says Carla Sofia Gascon was allowed to help shape Amelia Perez in any way, and let me tell you, it also shows. And I cannot imagine telling a story about someone from a marginalized community and thinking you don't at all need their input on how to do that or if you're getting it right. Never mind that a transition story is 100% not a cis man story to tell. Trans voices and stories are routinely stolen from us by cis people to suit their own ends. It's part of what Matrix Resurrections is about. Mm-hmm. See my book, Begin Transmission, for more on that. Let me also state here that none of the harmful representation in this movie is Carla's fault. There are so, so few roles for trans women, much less starring roles, and who had the absolute least power on that set? As a trans woman, she did. None of the problems are on her. I'd like to think she'd have seen how problematic it was and turned it down, but maybe she wasn't in a position to do so, especially with a high-profile Oscar bait film that could possibly make her career.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that happens in TV shows made in the U.S. On the rare occasion a trans writer is on the writing staff, they are the least empowered, and it is not safe for them to speak up about harmful representation without fear of reprisal. Cis people don't often like hearing that what they're doing isn't being such a good ally, gosh, and is instead actively harming the people they think they're helping.
I've been, without naming names or anything, I've been in those situations where, like, you're in a moment where it's like, oh, I can speak up for being trans, and I do, and the person kind of reacts violently and says, like, oh, you shouldn't, I mean, I'm doing this for you, shouldn't you be appreciative? And it can be really damaging to not only your career but also your safety so I don't blame her in the slightest for any
exactly
of this, so
yeah, so
there's
like
a lot of sensitive people in LA, let me tell you.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, well, it's a lot of ego that is the problem. It's a lot of like, I can change the world with my story, I can write about these people and change everything. And
yeah,
you tell them like, hey, maybe let us be a part of that story, or let us tell that story point blank. They'll get very violent about it, whether violent in a sort of political way or a career way. And I should also say, like you mentioned it earlier, but like she is actually great in this movie, Carla.
Yeah.
Like I think I like, regardless of the rest of the film, like she does a fantastic job in it. So
yeah. But like in that example I mentioned of the one trans writer in a mm-hmm. on the writing staff of a show, if they speak up they risk being fired and thus mm-hmm. possibly not being there to affect positive change later. It's a terrible situation to be in.
It's a thing that a lot of minorities deal with, where it's like if you're the token in the room, you don't feel like you can speak up. You just have to sort of be there to just sort of like sign, like co-sign whatever.
To make them feel like they have the approval of the community.
And which is very clear what's been done here, because, you know, I like it's clear that they're like, well, people will get angry at us if we don't cast a trans woman in the role, so we'll cast a trans woman in the role. So it's just using her to avoid blame, avoid harm, mm-hmm. or sorry, to avoid accusations of doing harm.
Yeah,
because like
very
anytime,
superficially.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very superficially. Like if I bet you, like, you know, you take any of these commentary to them and they will go like, oh, well, we had a trans woman involved, so that means we got it right, and you're actually the bigots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and writers from all marginalized communities face this to some degree mm-hmm. in Hollywood, which is still overwhelmingly run by cishet white men. Mm-hmm. Please see the link about that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what exactly did I find so harmful in Amelia Perez? I'm so glad you asked, because gosh, do I have answers for you. First, and this might be a me thing, but Amelia almost feels like a secondary character in her own story. The movie's named after her, and it's ostensibly about her transition, but we don't really see any of her transition or anything it involves, mentally or physically. There's a little, which we'll get to shortly. As a writer, to me, this movie felt like it was just as much, but maybe more so, about Zoe Saldana's lawyer character, Rita, who is hired to help Amelia transition and then befriends her.
It's a condescending choice, I found.
Yeah.
Because it is like, it is a choice to otherize Amelia right from the start of the story and portray her through that lens of like getting to know her as violent, as different, as other, rather than allowing it to be our own stories. Like even in movies that I also find problematic in their own way, like The Danish Girl or something like that, it's like at least there's like some oblong attempt to be like, all right, we're trying to see it through her, the main character's eyes as a trans person. Still have problems there, but like, no, here it's like, no, you need to understand her through the lens of an other. So I just felt like, oh, we can't even be in our own story
exactly
about us.
It is wild to me that a movie that is again supposed to be about a trans woman and her transition takes a back seat, mm-hmm. and she has to play second fiddle, or at best co-first fiddle, with a cis woman who is just so brave and such a good ally for helping this trans woman drug lord. It feels like a very cisgender-centered point of view, right? That's often what you're going to get when you have a cis person trying to tell a trans story that they have no business telling. And this is one of the reasons why. Again, to be fair, those were my personal impressions. I think they should definitely count for something as a trans woman screenwriter, as this is my exact wheelhouse, but let's set that aside. Let's do what I do when I watch any new movie or TV show, take it on its own terms. There's an early scene where Amelia, pre-social transition, meets with Rita, Zoe Saldana's lawyer character, and says she wants to hire her to help her transition to a woman. Rita says it's not an overnight thing and takes time. Hey, that's good. And then, pre-transition, man-presenting Amelia opens her shirt to reveal she's been on HRT for 2 years and has already developed breasts. Rita gasps. I've seen some folks say this was a gasp of disgust. I've seen some people say this was a gasp of surprise. What I want you to know is that either way, this is showing transition as a surprise and something to be shocked by. It's showing you trans people are duplicitous. See what she was hiding from you? Also, this trans woman is a violent drug lord. Can you even trust her? And like, yes, you can say maybe nobody would trust a violent drug lord. That's not transphobic. But I will remind you of what I say in basically every trans allegory write-up that I do. Everything you see in a movie or a TV show is a choice made by the creators. It's not made in a vacuum. It's not beyond questioning. The writer and director of this film chose to tell a story about a trans woman who was a violent drug lord. She could have been literally anything else. This is what he picked.
I also should, like, before we get too far away from that moment with the breasts reveal... Yes. It's also like, and this will be even more focused on the focus on trans bodies and like this sexualizing aspect of it, of like, oh, this proves like you're trans. It kind of has that trans medicalist sort of underlying thing to it of like, which there'll be a moment later on that's like extremely trans medicalist that we'll get
way
to.
Into that.
But like this is the first initial thing of it. It's like, oh, you're only legitimately trans because you have done some sort of physical transformation, medical transformation,
right?
Breasts sort of like under like, oh, you're actually serious because you have breasts. So like, right. The bigger thing is the duplicitous nature. I agree with you, but I think this is an early indication of the underlying trans medicalism throughout this like first third of the movie.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And there's also something else to be said for the fact that she opens her shirt to show them, and it's like, even if you felt you needed that moment, she could just say, I've been on hormones for 2 years. You don't have to have her open her shirt and surprise somebody with it, right?
And
was a choice.
It goes to like this idea that like our body parts are not our own, because like no woman, cis or trans, would ever just like reveal their breasts to some stranger.
And to a lawyer they just hired.
Right?
It's like, what?
Yeah, especially like this character who's like in a very vulnerable position too, is like, if people find out about me, I could be killed or whatever, which is like a whole point that they make here. But yeah, like it's something that happened to me too when I was younger. Like there was this, when I was first transitioning, there were people that would like point out like, oh, you have breasts or da 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 da, and it's like, well, they're not real because these are breast forms that you're using to give your body that shape, or you just started transitioning, so they're not that big, da 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 da. Sorry to be a little bit on the TMI side, but it's just like this element of like, oh, but this is my body and this is how like I am, this is me. Don't dismiss my body. And so it's like this weird thing where this character is treating her own body in this very dismissive way that a cisgender person would sort of view a trans person's body as, whereas no trans person would ever view their body that way.
Exactly. And trans people can be villains, by the way. We should be, because we can be any kind of character. But I'd argue that until cis people demonstrate they can write us as villains without damaging all trans people, however, maybe only trans people should be writing trans villains. Because even though the movie doesn't have Amelia transition to escape justice for her crimes, her transition is inextricably linked to it. And they thought, in the present horrific climate trans people are experiencing in this world, that presenting us as a violent criminal was a good idea. I can't imagine the thought process there other than to think not a second thought was given to it, which is not what you'd get if a trans person was telling this story.
Right, because like the first time we meet Amelia, you're supposed to be terrified.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is
a dangerous human,
duplicitous person.
Well, the entire film is that, like, part of the, I don't know if you get into it, I forget if you're getting into it later, but like every time, especially in the first half of the film, that Rita encounters her, it's fear. Like there's initially it's fear at the start, but as like her bag, like the guys, like her goons sort of like come and like grab her. And then every time after that, where that happens, Rita has like an actual trauma response to
Yeah.
Amelia. It's, yeah, it's really messed up.
Yeah. Okay. Early on, there is a musical number full of trans people, story-wise. I have no idea if any of them were played by actual trans people because they were in a musical ensemble. And a doctor who performs gender confirmation surgeries singing about how wonderful plastic surgery is and how they all love it. And to me, it really trivializes that these procedures are vital and life-saving. They're not goofy or just for fun. It also treats it like something every trans person wants and does, which is hugely problematic in its own right. The movie sadly does this a lot. Kind of presents Amelia's transition as the only way to do it, likely because the cis man writer and director literally doesn't know that's not true. As a perfect example of this, lyrics in the song go on about going, quote, from man to woman, woman to man, which ignores that non-binary people exist and treats trans women like we were men and trans men like they were women, and that it is only the surgery that changes that. This is 100% trans medicalism discussed in episode 60 of this show, if you need more. And here it's being presented to a wide audience of largely cis people, because cis people are the largest audience for anything because they outnumber trans people by such a wide margin in the population. And they're showing that this is what transition is. I actually think a goofy musical number about gender confirmation surgery could be effing amazing in the hands of a trans person who understands it and what trans people go through. In the hands of a cis person, it became a weapon that perpetuates some bad, bad shit.
The other element of it too in that song is because it's like the spectacle of the musical, a lot of the visuals are of these like super like heteronormative, very like stereotypically beautiful men and women being sort of paraded around during the surgeries, and it sort of presents this sort of like a like again this trans medicalism sort of thing, and also this underlying anti-transness of this is the goal that all trans people want. Like,
To
we
look
want to
cis and
look cis, look passing, look very stereotypically beautiful. And then you see Amelia, who, you know, does not fit that bill. And it sort of says like, oh, well, she's a lesser version of what like this guy could have done, because like they go to a different type of doctor at the beginning. So it's it then at the beginning. So it's like, again, it's like this very underlying like, oh, well, trans people are just not, are like lesser women or lesser men, or like we're not actually the things that we want to be, you know?
And we get right into that now when Rita goes to meet the surgeon who will perform Amelia's operations, and he says he can't change a patient's sense of self. Quote, if he's a he, he'll still be a he. If he's a she, she'll still be a she. This is actively transphobic and saying even with surgery, a trans woman is still a man mentally. It's appalling when mentally we've always been our true gender. This is again perpetuating the horrific real-world violence we face with transphobes thinking trans women are quote-unquote really men. When the scene ends, the doctor says Rita should tell Amelia to quote change his mind, as in he believes she's still a man and as such misgenders her. Cis bullshit. And the doctor says he can't, quote unquote, fix the soul. Trans people's souls don't need fixing, though. Rita then says that fixing the body fixes the soul, and fixing the soul fixes society. That's some weird, contorted cis justification for helping trans people because it might help society, but that's not our job. We just want to exist as ourselves. It's not on us to fix transphobes' hearts.
And this is the theme of the movie, and it is messed up.
It sure is.
I think it's important, though, to also point out that this view of transition is, I guess, historically accurate.
Well, with the trans medicalism,
Because cis
stemming
people
out of
controlled,
sociopath like version one, yeah.
cis people fully controlled how anyone transitioned.
Right.
And it was very much, well, if you want to become a woman, you can transition as long as you do it as medically as possible and also date men
Right,
after.
right.
Like you were forced into the heterosexual mold because.
And you had to be able to pass and think
Exactly.
you would make a believable, quote unquote,
So
believable.
this is a very cis viewpoint
It sure is.
of being trans.
Yep. And it's again that idea like that we're like you're still men underneath everything, and like it has to, and like the argument that Rita makes here, which is like you change the body, you change the soul, if you change the soul, to change society or whatever, it's like, yeah, it's that element of linking to like, oh, well, we'll do it to make society better, but it's also making this link of like you're not actually a woman until you've lived like in the body of one. But it's like we are women beforehand. And yes, like certain elements of how we're treated and seen are different, but you shouldn't define womanhood by like the oppression you endure. And like, yeah, it's a weird way to sort of like justify it through like, and it's also like a cis presenting thing too, of like what you're going to of how we help society, right? Like, oh, you can't just do it for yourself. Your transition needs to somehow be for the greater good of cisgender people.
Of course. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
But also, why are two cis people debating a trans woman's transition here? What the hell? Guess we can't allow a trans person to talk about how they actually feel and what it's actually like for them. You're telling me that Amelia the drug lord, with mountains of money and seemingly unlimited resources, couldn't have used a burner phone to call the doctor Rita found and talk to him herself. Again, all of these were active choices made by the writer and director, and they're some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Amelia tells Rita that she has to send her wife and kids away and they can never know about her transition. No reason is ever given. I feel like this is a carryover from the book, right? Oh, I'm a criminal and I'm transitioning to hide, so if my family knows, they can point the cops to me. But when you rightfully change Amelia's motivation there, and then you have this scene with no reason given for why they have to be sent away and can't know about her transition, what do you get? You're left to think Amelia's ashamed of being trans and doesn't want them to know, or that it's required as part of her transition. Spoiler, it actually used to be. Again, check out that transmedicalism episode. And again, we find that either way you interpret it, you're perpetuating bad, bad shit.
Mm-hmm.
In the hands of a trans person, this could be a powerful scene about how society wants us to be ashamed of ourselves, about how society wants us to think no one could ever love us for who we are and how all of that is bullshit. Instead, we get confirmation that that's just the way things are for trans people, and it infuriates me. Amelia has a later song about how all she cares about is transitioning. Now, like, yeah, it's super important for us for a whole host of reasons, but not to the exclusion of everything else. We don't stop caring about other people or loving our kids. Mm-hmm. This song paints us as selfish, self-absorbed assholes who only care about ourselves, because if we cared about others, we wouldn't transition, right? That is transphobic bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that a lot of times with people just talking on social media to you or just in general about how they want to transition, but their spouse is holding their children hostage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or saying, you can't transition. If you do, you'll never see your kids again.
Yeah, I know multiple
it's
trans people.
It's actually quite common.
It is, and it's horrible.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but like this is the recurring theme of the film about Amelia, is that she is self-absorbed and self-centered.
Yeah.
And it goes back continually to like, it's because she was quote unquote born a man. And like that male part of herself is what makes her selfish. And like, it's a continual, like right up to the end of the movie. Like the self-centeredness, manipulativeness, self-absorbed nature of her is constantly what gets in the way of like her getting to exist and like in her getting to like have like a full life, as we'll see. And it's like, and it keeps going back to like, yeah, she's changed because she transitioned, but like, can she really ever change deep down is like the constant thing.
Of course not. She's just a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amelia has a scene where she instructs Rita to destroy all evidence of her transition. Again, a possible artifact of changing her motivation for transition from being nothing more than escaping justice. But what you now have is a trans person who's going stealth and doesn't want anyone to know they're trans, as if trans is something bad to be. Bullshit. Amelia then apparently has all of the surgeries at once.
Yeah.
And her face is entirely covered in bandages, and she uses a hand mirror to look at her crotch. Then suddenly she's out of bandages and putting on women's clothes and it's all over. As if it's that easy and not an incredibly lengthy and difficult process. As if it's a quick switch you flip.
And before this, I was like, they're going to wave a magic wand, aren't they?
They did.
Do it.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
They show none of her adapting to it or how it affects her or what it means to her. The movie immediately skips ahead 4 years. So you miss all of that. It's the kind of stuff that feeds into the teachers are going to trans your kids at school and you send your son to school and he comes home a girl bullshit that transphobes use to gin up hatred toward us.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said earlier that Amelia and her transition, which again is what this movie is supposed to be about, plays second fiddle, this is what I mean. And on the one hand, I'm kind of glad because given what we've seen already, I would not trust this cis man writer director to get any of it right and not perpetuate more misinformation and harm. But in not showing what it's actually like, he still perpetuated misinformation and harm. This is why cis people need to stop taking trans stories from us.
Yep.
Then, years later, post-transition Amelia shows up to surprise Rita at a dinner party in a you-didn't-recognize-me-but-this-is-me-now way, again playing up the trans women are liars and tricksters aspect and the we're-just-a-surprise-to-cis-people angle.
And Rita is very scared.
Yeah, that was the thing I was going to mention. Yeah. She has a, Rita has a trauma response.
Like,
to,
oh, you're, like, you've come back to kill me or something.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then it gets this idea, it starts this like theme in the film of Amelia's like, no, look, I've changed. I'm better now. Like the whole song that she has there is like, no, I came here to thank you. And then I also still need you.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not just, I want to, I need to use you for something. But so there is still a duplicitous nature, even within the like, no, I've changed a bit.
Yep.
But it like goes this idea of like, oh, Rita has a trauma response. But look, she's a woman now. So she's better, as if like, oh, like it's fixed everything. But really, really deep down, there's something else going on is, again, the theme. So.
If you're not familiar, listeners, one derogatory term for trans women is traps, as if we exist only to lure cishet men into a trap because they think we're cis women, and then when they go to have sex with us, surprise, we trapped you into doing sex stuff with a trans woman, which I think scares so many cishet men because they worry it somehow makes them gay, when in fact being attracted to a trans woman is the most straight thing a cis man can do because we are women.
Mm-hmm.
And you can draw a straight line from the portrayals of us as quote-unquote traps and tricksters to things like the trans panic defense, which there's an essay about at tillystranstuesdays.com. It is a mess. Amelia later decides she can't live without her kids anymore, so Rita brings them to her in Mexico under a story that Amelia was their dad's cousin. Amelia's wife and kids do not recognize her, more lies and secrets from trans women. There's a scene of Amelia lying next to one of her kids in his bed, and Carla gives a really great performance here when the kid sings a song about missing his dad. But also the kid tells her she smells like his dad, but at this point Amelia's been on HRT for 6 years. Do you know what one of the first things to change for most people on HRT is? Your smell. I smell like a girl now, and it was one of the earliest changes from HRT that gave me gender euphoria. And if you need more on that, there's an essay at tillystranstuesdays.com. This one isn't really damaging, but it sure shows the person writing it knew jack shit about what hormone replacement therapy does to a body.
I actually would argue it is really damaging because what, again, goes to this underlying thing, it's biological essentialization.
It That's
is
true.
It's saying like you're like you can change whatever, but it's like you're still deep down, your smell is a man. Like
yeah,
your
that's
base.
A good point.
Yeah, and also it's perpetuating this sort of thing of like weird parental linkage thing, because a lot of conservative rhetoric around trans people, but especially trans men, weirdly enough, which is not the case here, but there's still an underlying part of it that goes to trans women, which is, oh, transing people, when someone gets quote unquote trans, you're ruining their ability to reproduce, and we need especially white trans people to reproduce to have more babies, because we just like that weird like white replacement theory nonsense, which like it is like obviously she's a Mexican trans woman here, so it's not like necessarily getting into all that like sort of like weird white like racist stuff. However, there is still that underlying thing that sort of underlies a lot of that conservative rhetoric, which is like children really know, or parents really know their child, which is often used to like say like, oh, we can't let you transition because I know who you really are.
Right.
But also like their kids have an innate connection to their parents that deep down they know who they really are. And again, in this very biologically essentialist way. So I would argue that this song, like, again, Carla is giving a fantastic emotional performance reacting to this kid and like, and the kid's like, I miss my dad and everything. But like the song itself is like biological essentialist and trafficking in like some of the same conservative sort of underlying notions that are used against trans people.
You are absolutely right. Amelia has another song later about how she's, quote, half him and half her, and doesn't know who she is. I should add, at no point in the film does Amelia actually struggle with her identity or her gender. This is not one of the things trans people actually go through, or we wonder if we're trans enough or if transition was right. By the way, yes, you are trans enough. Check out episode 13 of this show to learn why. Spoiler, it's because you're trans if you say you are. It makes zero sense for this song to be where it is in the movie with no other context. It feels like it's doing nothing but adding to the, quote, trans people are just confused nonsense that's used to take our rights away because we can't really know who we are or what's right for us. It perpetuates more bad shit. There's a portion of the movie where Amelia gets mad at the thought of losing her kids, and when that happens, her voice drops. Not to just being unmodulated or what have you in the way that can happen when we're stressed or upset. Monica, by the way, does this brilliantly. But her voice becomes the exact same as the one she used pre-transition at the beginning of the film. What's worse is she then gets violent with her wife for threatening to take the kids away and assaults her on a bed. It is not a sexual assault, but her wife is on her back on the bed and Amelia is on top of her, choking her, possibly even straddling her. I'm not going back to check that one, sorry. And speaking in her pre-transition voice in anger. And if you don't see this as directly perpetuating the trans women are violent men in dresses trope that is being used to ban us from public bathrooms and schools and take our ability to exist in public away, I don't know what to tell you. This perpetuates so much more bad shit.
It's again that underlying theme of Amelia has not changed deep down. Like, it's this constant theme that the movie has of like, oh, you can transition, you can try to run away, but deep down, you are still a man, you are still the same. So like, there's this constant, like, throughout the film, there are moments where she's speaking with her ex-wife. And you see these moments of like, supposed growth of like,
yeah,
she's not jealous of her wife like going out with another guy. Like she says, I cheated on my husband, which is Amelia, but she doesn't know that yet at this point in the movie. And like Amelia takes it all well, but then this moment when it comes to like their kids, she immediately goes back into like violence and anger, says they're my kids as well, when it's all, they're also her kids. So it's not even like our kids, it's my kids. So it's this like possessiveness, this sort of narcissism, which is like the thing that like people wield against trans people, were narcissistic.
Yeah.
And again, sort of like the implication too, with that moment of violence on the bed, is while I agree it's not a sexual assault in that moment, like the implication is that this is something that she used to do pre-transition, implied to be then sexual at those moments. And so it's sort of like, oh, this is echoing all of that. Like, you have not really changed stuff.
Yeah. It was the hardest scene to watch because I was like, I cannot believe you are doing this. You are portraying her as a violent man in a dress. How dare you? How dare you do this to us? I was so mad. And then somehow Amelia later becomes a victim of violence at the hands of her wife, who still doesn't know she's trans or her ex-husband, which is now perpetuating the trans women are victims trope that pops up in media again and again and again. Her wife then, upon learning Amelia's true identity, misgenders her after tying her up and throwing her in the trunk of a car. That car then explodes and Amelia dies.
One other thing too.
Yeah.
One other element that this movie like gets at that made me very angry was there's a whole subplot where now that Amelia has transitioned, she starts forming this like group to like figure out victims of violence by the cartels and stuff. And one element of that, because like that whole discussion is like, there's an element of that to like talk about like that context within Mexico, which is like best left for Mexican writers and elements. But one part of it too is there's a woman in it, Mrs. Flores, I think is the name. I don't even know if we get her first name, that Amelia starts dating, and she starts dating her because Flores comes in after hearing that her husband was one of the bodies found. And she says, oh, my husband used to assault me and attack me. And if he was actually here, I thought he might be alive still. He's not, thank God. And if he was, I would have killed him. And Amelia like starts to like hug her and like take care of her, and they even form a relationship after that.
Yeah.
Which, but what we as the audience are supposed to be thinking as we're watching those moments of like, oh, but she used to do that too.
Right.
Like, that's the implication of those moments when we linger on Amelia's face in those shots. And it gets that same idea that like people like J.K. Rowling wield against trans people, which is like, we should be excluded from women's like women's spaces and especially like women's like shelters, because really trans women are men who will victimize other women, despite like ignore the fact that trans women are more often likely to be the victims of domestic violence and abuse. But like, oh, we have to exclude trans women from these shelters because they're going to attack other cis women and perpetuate the domestic violence there when these women just want to get away from men. And so like those sequences where Amelia is like taking care of this other victim of domestic violence, and we're supposed to be thinking, but she did that too. It's perpetuating this connection in people's minds of like, oh, trans people are dangerous even to like people that they're taking care of because like they could just become violent any moment. And that is proven true later.
Exactly.
Like, well, it's never done against Flores, who like we just sort of like she like learns that Amelia dies and we never come back. Like Amelia dies before she like there's a moment where Amelia gets kidnapped and they think that she's dead. Like we never see Flores actually learning that Amelia did actually die. We only see her learning that she died later on. So she, like we never come back to her at any point.
Yeah.
She is just there as a function of like proving this idea of like Amelia hasn't changed deep down, and it's proven true later on because Amelia does do violence against her ex-wife. So it's just, yeah, it's like that subplot in here, wild and deeply, deeply harmful.
You know, now that I think about it too, that whole subplot with her trying to find victims of cartel violence, at no point does she reckon with how many of those victims she put there as a cartel leader. So again, it's a duplicity thing. She's doing this for cover, not because she has changed or cares. You could have had such a great moment of emotional reckoning for her. Like, oh my God, I did this to people. I was so horrible, you know, and that never, ever happens at all. It's all no. Wow.
Yeah, I did a whole video on my own channel called The Myth of Male Socialization. And kind of gets into this, but like one of the stories that I tell is that like as a kid, I hurt a cat once. Like I was 12 years old and I hurt a cat because I was being bullied, and it was like one of the worst moments of my life, and I deeply regret it. And the reason I tell that story is because like, yes, there is an element of like when I was younger, I was told to express myself through anger and violence whenever I felt pain, because that's what I was sort of like taught as a like a someone seen as a boy. But like how I grow from that is by taking accountability and being like, I caused this harm. I caused this damage because of what was going on with me. It's not like it is the harm that I perpetuated, and I need to take ownership of it and grow from it. It's why I've like worked really hard to like work with cats and take care with cats, and like tried a lot of the time to like try to, it's an element of like who I am, of like why I'm trying to hold myself accountable for those things that I grew up in. And yes, there's a, like, it comes from the society that placed me into these roles and placed me into this, like, you can only express things through these things. But it's about taking accountability and growing from it, not dismissing it, which is what Amelia does throughout this entire film, which is like, oh, that was a past me. I want to cut off all ties from it.
Yeah.
And then when that past, like, comes back to, like, confront her, like she still continually tries to disengage with it. And it goes back to the theme of the movie. It's like, you can't fix the soul. If she still sees herself as this way, you're not actually going to fix yourself. And because she like continually denies like this accountability and like reckoning with herself and like understanding herself, she perpetuates all of these things. And like, there is a core in here of like, if you had, as you just said, like had the character like actually try to integrate these things and be like, yes, like I did these harmful things, but it was like out of these different like elements of my life that I was going through, and that doesn't make it okay. I have to take accountability for it, but now I have a greater understanding of it. That could have been a great narrative, but this film has no desire to reckon with that. It's just going to this base like, you are essentially male. You can never change. That's your core nature. Don't even bother trying.
Yeah. Somehow this movie managed to hit every harmful trope about trans women at the same time. We learned we are for shock value. We are duplicitous. We're selfish. We're confused. We're violent. We're victims. And we can't be trusted. Like, how do you hit every single damned one of those without even trying? It's like a transphobe writer's checklist of things to include to be sure they're sticking it to the transes. Other folks have also written about how damaging this movie is to Mexico and Mexicans, with the director even admitting he didn't bother researching Mexico before telling this story about Mexican people in Mexico. And if he didn't do that, how much do you think he researched about trans women? Clearly, from the results in the movie, the answer is none. If you would like to read more about the horrible depiction of Mexico as nothing more than full of violence and drug gangs, also at a time where those tropes are being used to hurt Mexican immigrants by the same people using transphobic tropes to hurt trans people, there's an article in the show notes. There's a link to another article in there that outlines a lot of the issues with this movie. And there's also another link in the show notes from GLAAD, who felt the representation in this movie was so bad that they had to write about it and the harm it's done. And it also collects a lot of other quotes and statements from trans and queer reviewers who are just as appalled as I am. This movie perpetuates every bad lie you've ever heard about trans women and confirms for transphobes everything they think they know about us. I don't give a shit about bigots, but think about what this movie is going to do to the people who just don't know much about trans people but have heard the propaganda. This is going to confirm all the bullshit lies, and it could make them support the people trying to take our rights away. When you tell a story about a marginalized community you don't belong to, you have an obligation to do no harm. But you also better think long and effing hard about whether or not it's your story to tell. No cis white man has any business telling a story about what it's like for a Mexican trans woman to transition. If you think that's an important story to tell, hire a Mexican trans woman to tell that story. I assure you they exist. This is what happens when our voices are stolen. This is what happens when our stories are appropriated by people who don't understand us and don't care to learn and think they know us better than we know ourselves. And it has got to stop. Thank you for being here, Jesse.
Thank you for having me. And I do want to say one thing, too, among this, like, that powerful ending statement on it is, like, it angers me most with this movie. Like, it's getting all the awards attention.
Yeah,
it is cis people patting themselves on the back for saying, oh, we told the trans story, when all you've done is perpetuate your own implicit biases and tell every single trans person out there that even the people that supposedly are trying to, like, say they have your back are actively willing to profit off of you, exploit you, and peddle in the same narratives as the people who are attacking your rights. So really, all you've done here is pat yourself on the back, make yourself feel good, while actually causing demonstrable harm to the trans community, as you said. So, like, it's just the awards nomination, and, like, we're recording this right now before, I don't know if this will release before the Oscar nominations get released, but I swear if this gets Oscar nominations and then movies like, you know, The People's Joker or I Saw the TV Glow, which are like these deeply trans narratives that deserve also those awards, don't get nominated, and it probably won't. They probably won't. It'll probably get, this movie will probably get a bunch of nominations. It will deeply, deeply anger me. So
me too. We'll be angry together.
So sorry, I didn't mean to take it because your ending was super powerful. But
no, it's totally
that
fine.
Anger, because that's the thing that just boils my blood about this movie.
Yeah, same. Art can change the world. The question is, do you want to change it for the better or worse? Hire more trans writers. We need these gigs. The world needs our stories told by us, maybe now more than ever. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, and you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.